Hello and welcome to the In the Pen podcast, a podcast about relievers, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Jake Crumpler, and as always, I'm joined by Pitcherless bullpen expert Rick Graham. Rick, episode 123. How you feeling? And the Switch 2 came out today, and I actually haven't gotten a chance to talk about it with anybody. I don't know how much of a video game person you are, but hey, that's how we're starting off the show. How you doing? Episode 123. Are you getting a Switch?
We have talked about it.
And by we, you mean your wife, right?
Wife and I. We got an Xbox. I can't even remember the newest Xbox. That's how much I play video games now. but she was playing Hogwarts Legacy on it, and I play NCAA football or their show.
Yeah, we have talked about this.
Yeah, so. We try to get into some multiplayer games. We played Diablo a little bit together, which was fun. But yeah, we also talked because the Switch seems like there's a bit more multiplayer, more fun multiplayer games on it. So we talked about it. I didn't even know the Switch 2 came out today. I know it was coming out soon. I didn't know it's already out. Wow.
Yeah, I'm pretty pumped. I didn't get a pre-order it, but I definitely want to get one. I have a regular Switch, but I'm certainly the person who likes to get the new consoles. I'm PlayStation, Nintendo only, so I'm really only getting two sets. I'm not going all the way through the Xbox and everything else. I don't have a PC or anything, so I'm not super crazy about spending a ton of money on video games, but it is one of the few things I actually spend money on. So I'm super pumped to get it. I don't know when I'm going to get it, but I'm definitely going to get it at some point. I may probably wait a little bit longer until we're closer to the next Pokemon game coming out, because that's going to be pretty dope on the Switch too. But I think it's going to be a fun console. I'm pretty pumped. I even saw they had trailers for the most recent Pokemon game that came out running on the Switch 2. I don't know if you know the controversy around Scarlet and Violet on the Switch 1, but it is. It runs so poorly. It's just so jumpy, just terrible quality. You can't imagine that Pokemon is the largest media corporation in the world of all time, and they're producing games that just aren't even ready. So it runs incredible on Switch 2 from what I've seen. So that's really exciting.
That's good. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure I bet you will end up with one at some point. So we'll have to figure out how to play some games online. Yeah,
that's right. That's right. That would be fun. All right, cool. Let's hop into some baseball though. Today we've got a full slate of stuff to talk about relievers. We'll start it off as always with the injuries, transactions, and news from the past week. Then we'll head up into our three up, three down section where we discuss the closers rising and falling on Rick's closer ranks. And lastly, we'll close things out with our main topic as we determine the best bullpens in each division in baseball. But let's start it off with the news and notes and kick things off with our injuries. As Justin Slayton was placed on the 15-day IL with shoulder inflammation, Luis Guerrero was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move, but Boston's top setup man will head to the IL, unfortunately. Looks like Garrett Whitlock is going to be one of the biggest benefactors of Slayton's absence in terms of his ability to impact fantasy from a saves plus hold standpoint.
Yeah, I think Whitlock and Greg Weiser probably the two guys.
GW.
GW Weiser.
Both of them are GW.
Oh, you're right. The GWs.
That's right.
Those two GWs who probably get the most holds in Slayton's absence. I do like Luis Guerrero a lot. I would like. It's not really a spot for him to stick on the roster, but it's always someone interesting to keep in mind when he gets called up. Like a lot of these young relievers, it all comes down to command with Guerrero. And if he's not walking the yard, he's going to be pretty effective because he's got big time swing and miss stuff. Justin Wilson's also kind of been factoring in a little bit more into as far as, and he's their top lefty, besides Aroldis Chapman there. So Wilson could also factor in. I don't think he's really a holds option yet. Without Slayton, it's really just Whitlock that interests me. He's been pitching better lately. He was fine, but he's starting to get some more strikeouts involved in there too. So, little boost for Whitlock with Slayton being out. But I don't think I'd really roster anyone else in this bullpen and holds leagues.
All right. That's the Red Sox bullpen. Next, we'll discuss Robert Stevenson, who was placed on the 15-day IL with biceps inflammation. Sam Aldegari was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move, but this was super unfortunate because, I mean, if you tuned in last week, I made a huge deal about Robert Stevenson coming back and looking dope in his return, but then unfortunately... his second outing, though, he was grabbing at his arm immediately after throwing a pitch, and that's always scary. Luckily, it's biceps inflammation, but you know, could have been worse.
We kind of joked about it, like he's throwing 98, 99 in his first outing, like, you know, maybe like tone it down a little bit for, you know, your first time out. But yeah, maybe he went a little too hard in that first outing, and it was weird because he seemed like he was fine, and then like he didn't talk to the media. I don't know. It was a weird. I think biceps inflammation can usually it's typically minor, you know, as far as arm injuries are concerned. But just giving his past history, it's like who knows when we'll see him again. The Angels are still kind of kicking around the playoff race. I know it's still early, but. I can't imagine they rushed Stevenson back after, you know, just returning.
Yeah, and it's fair to be concerned, too, a little bit, even with the biceps injury, because it's not like the biceps is the next muscle over from the forearm. So I feel like there could be a little bit of residual pain across it. So certainly a possibility that this is more severe than the Angels are letting on right now, but Robert Stevenson will be out. It was interesting, though, to see Reed Detmer starting to get some high leverage opportunities. Yeah. I'm not necessarily suggesting that he's somebody to target in fantasy, but we haven't really seen him in a, you know, relief only role where he's pitching in high leverage situations, and so much so that he got a save in extra innings the other day. Do you see any potential for Detmers to be somebody to keep an eye on in fantasy, at least? Because I'm just thinking about the possibility of his stuff playing out in the bullpen, because that's never been a thing for him, is his stuff being bad. It's always been a control.
Yeah, it seems like he's starting to settle in a little bit for, you know, transitioning into the bullpen. It was rocky in the first couple of months, and then he does look a little bit better. He had a good week. I moved him up in my holds list this week because, yeah, I mean, behind, you know, Ryan Zephyrjohn, there's definitely some openings in that bullpen, especially if Stevenson's going to be out for a while. Mm-hmm. Jansen's not pitching well. So, there's definitely room. I always thought he was going to get moved back into the rotation at some point. I still feel like there might be something there as a starter, but. Maybe he has that like Chris Bubich route where he kind of transitions into a reliever, dominates there, and then they can move him back. Yeah. Like once he kind of figures things out in the bullpen. So, Detmer's definitely a name to keep an eye on. Cause yeah, you get potentially, you know, big time strikeout numbers with Detmers as long as he's not, you know, getting lit up.
Totally. Yeah. Cause that's what he was good at as a starter. He had high strikeout numbers. It was just somebody who got hit hard and wasn't able to control his stuff that well. Yeah. We're also seeing 1.5 additional miles per hour to his fastball, or at least in his last outing. That's what it was at. He was at 96.5 miles per hour on that heater. So definitely somebody to keep an eye on. I wouldn't go picking him up anywhere, but Detmers is somebody to consider in the future. Next, we'll discuss Luke Weaver, who was placed on the 15-day IL with a hamstring strain. Fernando Cruz was activated from the 15-day IL in a corresponding move. He had been out for a couple weeks with shoulder inflammation and will return to being one of the Yankees' top setup men behind Devin Williams and Mark Leiter Jr., who's had an incredible season moving up the ladder in New York.
Yeah, it's, I guess, good news for Devin Williams and Devin Williams managers out there who have been patiently waiting for him to get a chance to close out games. I mean, Cruz is back and Leiter's been pitching well, but I don't think those two are much of a threat to Williams unless Williams continues to struggle or has some issues. His first outing with Weaver on the IL was a little rocky, but there's, you know, some bad luck involved. And the Guardians did a really good job fouling pitches off, it's tough. I don't know if that's like a, you know, if that's something on Williams' fault where like his stuff's just not, you know, it's not as unhittable as it used to be, or if the Guardians were just really, you know, locked in fighting pitches off. But I'm not giving up hope on Devin Williams. I think, you know, he showed in the past month that he's basically back to the guy that we've known for the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. I think he just needs to get that one, like, you know, clean save, that one lockdown save, kind of alleviate all the other pressure. Cause right now he's pressing a little bit. He's, you know, New York's obviously a tough place to pitch. But I think he'll be fine. And yeah, Cruz and Leiter, kind of similar, you know, splitter, big time splitter guys, but they'll be fine. I think they'll be fine as setup guys there. So even without Weaver, I feel like the Yankees bullpen's still in a pretty good spot right now.
All right. That's Devin Williams replacing Luke Weaver as the Yankees closer for the next couple of weeks. Our next injury involves Colin Snyder, who was placed on the 15-day IL with a forearm flexor strain. Casey Legumina was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. And honestly, more interestingly, Daniel Bard signed a minor league contract with the Mariners. I mean, I don't think he's going to make it to the majors, but just the fact that he's still employed to throw baseballs is crazy. And I wouldn't count out the Mariners figuring this one out, Daniel Bard good again.
I mean, they kind of did that with Drew Pomeranz this offseason, sure, spring, and then they traded him, you know, to the Cubs, and he's having success in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Maybe they'll do the same with Bard.
Send him back to the Rockies. Don't tell.
That would be so peak Rockies. But, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. So, yeah, I mean, Snyder was pitching good up until like 2 weeks ago. So this is unfortunate. I still love Gabe Spear there. He's their best reliever. That's not Andres Munoz. I mean, we were kind of talking in the chat on the Discord today about, or the last couple of days, about like why Spear's not getting that many holds. And it's kind of based on just him being the top lefty and usage factors, but Spear's just been a beast this year, and he should be considered their. I know that Matt Brash is there, but he hasn't looked. This isn't Matt Brash that we're used to. I mean, he's not getting any strikeouts. The stuff's mostly where it used to be, but you know, command's not. I mean, he's never been a big command guy, but it's really not, you know, where it needs to be right now for Brash. He's been getting lucky. He's been fine, but.
Yeah, I mean, his whip is like 1.3, and he's got a perfect ERA.
Yeah, it's been a weird season for Brash, especially, yeah, considering he usually is a high whip guy with really big strikeouts. But
yeah,
it's just there's no swing and miss right now from him. So, you know, it's Spear and Munoz, and then, yeah, I guess, you know, Brash is probably the third guy that they trust in that bullpen, but maybe Daniel Bard gets the call at some point and gets a chance there. I know Carlos Vargas has been kind of, you know, he's been inconsistent, but he's still flashed, you know, periods of being dominant. He still throws really hard.
He's bruised our Gratterall 2.0.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, if he gets the command there. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I just mean with the velocity and the ground balls and no strikeouts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of how it is. Yeah. This is a big ground ball guy. I know he's.
Well, I know he's a sinker guy. So yeah. I assume
he probably is. Yeah.
Yeah.
That whole bullpen. All right. Is.
True. Okay. Let's move over to our final injury. This one has not been made official, but Daisbell Hernandez is expected to be placed on the 15-day IL. The injury designation obviously has not been made official either, but pinky numbness has been reported, and that's always an issue anytime you have any numbness in the hand, suggests some sort of forearm injury in most cases. So definitely concerning with Daisbell Hernandez there. But in a corresponding move, Craig Kimbrell had his contract selected from the minors to make his return in Atlanta. And boy, is it perfect timing too, with Raisel Iglesias really struggling. It looks like they know who they want their next closer to be.
I mean, it's a good story for the vibes, I guess. The Kimbrell coming back to Atlanta to save them, literally save games and save the team. But I mean, he's pitched well in AAA. I feel like, you know, Pierce Johnson might need, or and I think Dylan Lee deserves a chance before anyone else. I know he's a lefty, but Lee's actually had better. He's had reverse splits this year. He's been better against righties, and I don't know. Lee's a bigger strikeout guy than anyone else there. Johnson to me is like a rich man's Luke Jackson, where it's like the curveball is like his one pitch that he gets a lot of, you know, swings and misses on, mostly against righties, though. That's the thing, is against lefties, I don't know if Pierce Johnson is the guy you want out there. So I feel like Dylan Lee could be, could factor in if Iglesias does lose the job. But yeah, or they just go a committee because they're you got one lefty, you got one righty. Maybe they just go the committee approach, or maybe it's Kimbrel, which would be, I mean, it's just rare to see someone go from AAA to closing out games on a bad team, maybe. But like, I guess the Braves aren't playing well, but they're not like that. You know, this is like the White Sox took someone from AAA and moved them into the closer role. Fine. But the Braves to do it, that would just be, even with being Craig Kimbrel, it still feels weird to me. So I don't know. We'll have to see. It's an interesting situation. I could see there being a case for Iglesias being out as the closer after today. So, yeah, something to monitor.
All right. Yeah. Well, Kimbrel's been pretty solid at AAA. He's got a 2 ERA to go with a 33% strikeout rate. The walks are still up, and he's gotten away with a 0 home run per 9. So it's certainly possible that that ERA is going to be more inflated. He's got a 3.67 xFIP, but Kimbrel has shown in the past that when he has his control, then he's pretty solid. So fingers crossed, I would love to see him have some success there in Atlanta, and they definitely need it with the way that bullpen's been performing recently. But that will wrap up our injuries. Next, we'll move into our transactions, and we'll start with Jorge Lopez, who was designated for assignment by the Nationals. He was subsequently released, meaning Jorge Lopez is now a free agent, and in a corresponding move, Eduardo Salazar was recalled from the minors. But this one's pretty notable because Lopez was one of the larger free agent signings of the Nationals over the offseason, and then he was factoring into high leverage situations, and now with him and Lucas Sims gone, it's sort of a big shakeup in terms of who's getting holds. And right now Roster Resource is trying to tell me that Brad Lord is now the top setup man in Washington after being a starter to open the year.
There's like three, they have like between Lord, Rutledge, and Henry, it's like all these starter turn relievers. It's really going to be interesting, as I think it was John Heyman. It was one of the, you know, insiders saying that the most likely reliever to be traded is Kyle Finnegan at the deadline, which is funny because no one wanted Kyle Finnegan last year. Now they do, I guess. But I like what happens when he there's so many options there that are just, I mean, it's probably a situation to avoid for the most part. I don't even think it's worth speculating on. I mean, Ferrer's pitched better lately, but I don't know if they're ready to give him, you know, the closer role. So, but yeah, like Lopez and Sims definitely busted out that those moves didn't work. And it's really, you know, that's the one piece. And the lineup's starting to get, it's a fun lineup in Washington. And, you know, you got Mackenzie Gore, and, you know, maybe you can get another couple decent starters in that rotation. You figure out the bullpen there. You know, this is a team that could start making moves, but it's not going to be this year. Maybe next year if they really can figure out that bullpen. But yeah, because, you know, you can't just be throwing darts on like Jorge Lopez and Lucas Sims and hoping like if maybe one of them hits, but you need more than just those two guys.
And then giving up before you even try to like, they tried to trade them, but yeah.
The Sims, I mean, they just like, they kind of gave up early, but I mean, who knows? If they can just find a couple solid relievers there, then yeah, gives me some hope for their future.
All right, that's the Nationals. Next, we have Joe Mantiply, who was designated for assignment and subsequently released. This one's not really fantasy relevant, but it is in the pen relevant. Joe Mantiply has been somewhat of a mascot for this podcast ever since he was named to the All-Star team in 2023. It was very fun. So rest in peace, Joe Mantiply, All-Star Joe Mantiply's
All-Star Joe Mantiply. Diamondbacks
career.
Yeah.
Any eulogy here for Joe Mantiply in his Diamondbacks career? All-Star Joe Mantiply.
All-Star Joe Mantiply. I mean, for this bullpen, which has been terrible, it's a little surprising. I know he's had some struggles this year, but it's not like, you know, Jalen Beeks is really thriving as their lefty right now. And I'm sure Mantiply gets scooped up rather quickly. And I think he still had options left. So it's not. We'll see where he lands. Maybe someone can turn him around. But he is kind of older for someone who has only like 3 years, I think 2 or 3 years to his his service time. So
mm-hmm.
I don't know. We'll see All-Star Joe Mantiply appear at some point. Well, I'm sure he'll be on the news rundown soon.
Yeah, fingers crossed. All right, next we've got Eric Swanson, who had been out on the 60-day IL with a median MIRV entrapment, but he was just activated from the 60-day IL to rejoin the Blue Jays bullpen. In a corresponding move, Easton Lucas was optioned to the minors. I wouldn't expect Swanson to immediately start factoring into high leverage situations in Toronto, especially with some other arms stepping up like Yariel Rodriguez and Brandon Little. But Swanson was a guy who was relied upon as a holds option, one of the top holds options in baseball when he was with the Mariners and then into his early days with the Blue Jays. So I'm hoping he can figure things out here, but I think we're going to have to sit back and watch until we really start him, see him get into the flow of the season.
Yeah, it's been a while since he's been really effective. but yeah, a name that's been a very useful holds league guy in the past. So, and with the way the Blue Jays are developing pitching all of a sudden, especially out of their bullpen, gives me some hope that maybe they can figure something out with Swanson, get him turned around this year. But yeah, the bullpen's pretty deep right now, so I don't think he factors into much of a holds. There's probably not a lot of high leverage work for him right now.
All right. That's Eric Swanson. Next, we'll discuss Will Klein. And this one, definitely not fantasy relevant. It made me very angry when I saw it. What had happened is the Mariners had Will Klein and they decided to trade him to the Dodgers in exchange for Joe Jacques.
Yeah. Former Red Sox.
You know, totally fine and everything in terms of a baseball sense. But like, yeah, Jock is a lefty, but he's also like 31 and Klein's like 25. So you've got more ability for somebody to, you know, take a next step. I think the service time was pretty similar. But if you look at like, okay, I want Joe Jock because he's got more experience. It's like, dude has thrown 10 more innings in the major leagues than Will Klein. And then to top it all off, it's like, oh, it's the Dodgers. Yeah, we'll just hand you off Will Klein for free. The thing is, mm-hmm. Will Klein had options. The Dodgers just took him and sent him to the minors. Like, they didn't even care. They sent him to the minors and they signed Jose Urania. And they were like, yeah, that'll do it. And the Dodgers are still going to win 100 games with Jose Urania on their team. But anyway, I was pretty pissed off that the Mariners were basically giving away somebody like Will Klein, who I actually think has potential to being good. Like, it's not like it's just some random dude who's 25 and you trade him for like a veteran reliever. It's like, no, this is a guy who we touted a couple years ago as like one of the top Royals relief prospects, and he hasn't really panned out. But I saw that and I was like, what the heck? Why are we helping the Dodgers?
Yeah, I would have expected a lot of teams to be in on Klein. He's still 25, still shows at least the minor league level, he shows, you know, that strikeout upside that everyone's been excited, you know, the Royals, Oakland, Seattle have been excited about. You know, all three teams have rostered him at some point in the past 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's scary. It's, you know, the Dodgers getting their hands on him now. He gets to go work with Alexis Diaz in AAA, and I'm sure one of them will figure things out and be a factor at some point. But the Dodgers, I mean, I guess it's kind of news for this weekend. It sounds like they're going to get some pieces back finally to that bullpen. So it's not just, you know, Lou Trevino trying to get big hitters out at late in games. They should get back Kopech and I believe Yates maybe too. So yeah, they're finally starting to get healthy, and it's at a good time because they're scuffling a little bit. I mean, they're still going to be in the playoffs, but like, these injuries are starting to kind of take a toll on them. I know, right? You like that, or you don't like that, but you like that they're not playing well. So
yes. That's yeah. It's fine. Not playing well. Still in first place. It's just only by a little bit. All right. Let's move on to Chris Martin, who was activated from the 15-day IL. He had been out for the minimum time with shoulder fatigue, and he's returning at the honestly perfect time. Robert Garcia hasn't appeared in a week, but he was getting saves with Luke Jackson apparently being removed from the closer role. And I think Chris Martin may have a leg up over Garcia, though. We'll have to see how this plays out. Definitely would be thinking about grabbing Chris Martin in the majority of my leagues just to see how this turns out.
Yeah, I would like to see Martin in the closer role, but it's like, it just, he's never, I don't know. I'll believe it when I see it type
exactly
with Martin closing out games. I think I have that game on right now. The Rangers are up 3-1 in the ninth inning. We'll see who closes things out for them. Martin makes more sense as the closer, but Garcia has pitched well since he moved into the role. So, we'll see. It's not Luke Jackson. And I like how you said, like, since he was seemingly removed or whatever, did anyone ever really talk about like there being a switch there? It's like, when they removed Brian Walker, it's like, yeah, okay, we removed Ryan Walker from the closer role. Camille Duvall is going to be the closer. And like in Texas, it's just like, oh, I guess Robert Garcia is closing out games now. Maybe they haven't made an announcement because they were waiting for Chris Martin to come back. I don't know. Or maybe it's just Bochy's and that's not how he's going to roll. It's something to keep an eye on because I was kind of pushing Robert Garcia up the ranks, but now with Martin back, maybe that's a little premature.
All right. Yeah, we'll see how that plays out. I'm certainly interested because there's a possibility to capitalize on that with Martin probably available in a lot of standard leagues.
Yeah.
Next, we'll discuss TJ McFarland, who was activated from the 15-day IL. He'd been out with a groin strain. He'll return to being the top lefty in the A's bullpen. He might have some competition now because he wasn't pitching too well before the injury, but was really sort of coasting off of his success from 2024. McFarland was being relied upon in high leverage situations, but since he's been injured, a couple other lefties have stepped up, namely Sean Newcomb, who came over from the Red Sox and has the ability to go multiple innings. So maybe he's not locked into being the top lefty, but Hogan Harris, who was a former starter and has been going multiple innings when he does pitch, has been pitching much better than McFarland has. So it's possible that McFarland doesn't return to being the number one left-handed option for holds in Sacramento, but he is back. I think more importantly, though, Justin Sterner was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move, and he had actually been factoring into this bullpen a lot into high leverage situations. It was basically him and Tyler Ferguson cleaning up before Mason Miller pitched the ninth, and Sterner got off to a really hot start, but then quickly fell off, and it was a rough May for him.
Yeah, really has struggled in May. He was someone who was kind of exciting in April. This whole bullpen, and I have to believe the ballpark factors into it a little bit, but still, this bullpen's been really, really rough this year. McFarland's not a big strikeout guy at all, but he does always get, he always gets a ton of holds. So you could do worse in holds leagues if that's all you're looking for. They need to find someone to get the ball to Mason Miller in the ninth. Ferguson's been struggling. Sterner struggled, got optioned. Atanya's got optioned. Leclerc's hurt. Got
injured.
Yeah. So it's like they desperately need some help in that bullpen. McFarland at least gives him a steady lefty to rely on, but nothing really exciting.
All right, let's wrap things up with our final transaction as Tyson Miller was activated from the 15-day IL and subsequently designated for assignment by the Cubs. He pitched really well for the club last year, 2.32 ERA, the 23% strikeout rate, was relied upon in high leverage situations often, but it hasn't been the case this year. Still a lot of team control for Tyson Miller, but he will likely end up on another team. I assume he's either going to be claimed or end up as a free agent.
Yeah, I just know that this is Kyle Bland's a big fan of him. I think he talked about him on when we had Kyle on earlier in the year.
Mm-hmm.
It's surprising that they keep Genesis Cabrera, who they just picked up last week, 2 weeks ago, has no team control left, and they already have two lefties in Teobar and Pomeranz, so it's not like they need Cabrera. It's a weird, that bullpen's in a tough spot because no one has options there. So, Miller outside of Palencia, who's their closer now. So they had to just completely DFA someone, and Miller's the odd man out, but I expect he latches on with someone rather quickly. A lot of teams could use him in middle relief help. Especially the last year, 0.81 whip, 62 innings. I mean, that's not just that's hard to find, especially on the waiver wire, you know?
Yeah, that's not just luck. That's not just like a low BABIP. Although,
yeah.
204 BABIP last year.
I mean, it could be lower.
That is fair. That is true. Well, yep, Tyson Miller definitely available for other teams that are interested. Right now, it is up in the air who he's going to pitch for next, but certainly some potential there for Tyson Miller leaving Chicago. Next, we'll head into our three up, three down section, but first we're going to take a quick break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen discussing relief pitchers. We're heading into our three up, three down section where we discuss the closers rising and falling on Rick's closer rank. So let's start it with our risers, leading off with Emmanuel Clase, who is continuing to lock in and, you know, sort of back up his status as the offseason number one closer. He got off to a slow start this year and got us a little bit scared, but he's certainly locking back in recently.
So he allowed 4 hits and 3 earned runs against the Pirates on April 20, 420. Didn't pitch again until April 26th, so they gave him a little bit of an extended break, probably the longest break of Class A's career, to be honest, because the way that they use him, I mean, he doesn't get a lot of time off like that. So
I haven't pitched in 3 days. In 3 days, we gotta get your maintenance outing.
He gets 6 days off, and he's been pretty lights out since then. Cool. You know, 31% K rate from him, which is like for Class A, that's like, it's extremely high. And that comes with a 20.5% swinging strike rate. So it's, you know, backed up by that. 0.68 whip, 2.14 Sierra. That's over his last 14.2 innings. So this is the guy. This is the guy you wanted to draft. This is the guy you were drafting when you took him up a top 50 pick. Plus, you know, the strikeout rate is a nice added bonus, because that was not, I don't think anyone was, you know, drafting Class A for strikeouts. They shouldn't be. This is a fun kind of new look Class A that I'm excited for in the second half. And just quietly been dominant since, you know, April 20th.
All right, that's Emmanuel Class A locking in since 420. Next, we have Will Vest, who, you know, opened the season in the Tigers bullpen. Tigers bullpen was trying to sort itself out, and Will Vest has really taken off this year. Last year was solid, but he's got a 1.80 whip and a 27% strikeout rate on the season. He did go a week where he was just locked in as the Tigers closer, but then recently has been used outside of safe situations. Nonetheless, he's still having success when he does so, but this is what you've discussed as we've discussed the Tigers bullpen throughout the year. Like, is it worth putting a ton of fab money on somebody like Vest, or like holding somebody like Bobrieski, because we're not sure how AJ Hinch is going to work things out here. And it seems like he's just going to continue to sort of play around with our expectations.
Yeah, I feel like it's AJ Hinch using some sort of like high leverage machine that just like spits out a name, like use AI. This person. Yeah, like honestly, there's no rhyme or reason, but it's working. So they're not going to stop doing it. So I did think that with, you know, Vest earned the last 4 saves up until yesterday. So I'm like, all right, maybe this is finally happening. Maybe this is, you know, it's finally Vest's turn to just be the closer there. Mm-hmm. And then, he goes out and works, the 7th and 8th? And then Conley got the 9th. Yeah. So it's still a committee. At least it's just those two guys, and that's that kind of makes it a little bit easier. I still, obviously, Vest is the preferred person to roster. I guess in 16 teamers, Conley is still someone you can get a save here and there from. So
it looks like yesterday when Vest pitched the 7th and the 8th, he faced 9, yes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Right. So the 2 innings is, I mean, he's done it before, so it's not too surprising, but he hadn't done it in a while. But yeah, you're right. It definitely has to do with the part of the lineup that was up. So that's how they're going to play things. It's going to be frustrating at times, but Vest still feels like someone who needs to be rostered in most 12 teamers. The strikeout stuff's not exactly exciting. A little bit of a lack of swing and miss lately, especially, but That whole bullpen doesn't have a ton of swing and miss anyway. So I'm still team vest in Detroit, but it's, you're going to have a week where he doesn't get a save and you just got to deal with it.
Yeah. And he's pitching well enough that it's
he's not going to hurt deal you with at it. Least. Yeah. So, yeah.
All right. Our final riser is Justin Martinez, who returned from the IL last week, maybe closer to 2 weeks ago. But we discussed and displayed a little bit of concern that maybe Shelby Miller might continue to factor into the ninth inning for the Diamondbacks. He's been really consistently good this year and has been trusted by Torey Lovullo all year long. But Justin Martinez is the guy who should be the closer, and he's returned to being the closer. Wednesday was a little bit tough. He got the final five outs of the game, but it came with four walks and four strikeouts, but he worked around a run, got the job done, and a hit by pitch. Wow. So the control is clearly not there, but Justin Martinez still throwing 100 miles per hour and getting opportunities in the ninth.
Yeah, I hope that was just kind of a one-off with the command issues, because that, I mean, that's been, he's been that guy in the past, but not this year. So hopefully that was just like some weird anomaly that just came back, you know, his past kind of came back to him. Mm-hmm. But I'm still, the strikeouts are obviously exciting, and the velo, and as long as the velo is there, he's going to strike out a bunch of guys. So I, you know, AJ Puck can't return until July 1st, I think it is. So he's got, you know, Martinez has a whole month to kind of take that closer role and run with it and make it so Puck's not even a consideration when he does return.
All right. That's the Diamondbacks bullpen, and that will wrap up the risers. Next, we'll move over to our fallers, as these guys have to fall down the list to accommodate our risers. We'll start it off with Trevor Megill, who honestly, in my mind, has been pitching well recently, but honestly, I'm just looking at results most of the time. I got him on one fantasy team, so it's like every day I'm like, oh, Trevor Megill save. And honestly, the real reason why I have that perception is because I roster Abner Uribe in a more important league, and I'm like, get Abner Uribe in there, but he's not getting in there despite pitching very well this year. So that has me assuming that Trevor Megill must be doing something great. But why is he a faller?
Yeah, I mean, he's been having success for the most part, 2.21 ERA, 12 saves. But he, I think I had him higher, thinking he might return to his, like, you know, 2023, early 2024 status.
Yeah.
But he's just not. He's not missing bats. He's, the command is not great. The swing and miss isn't there. So I do wonder if that, you know, he didn't pitch from what, April 4th to April 11th. He was dealing with like a knee injury around that time. And at least since then, it's been very middling, like 7.7% K to walk, K minus walk, 27.9% CSW, 4.49 Sierra. Over his past 18 innings, which are, you know, not the worst numbers, but not not where I was hoping for Megill, you know, especially that strikeout rate. But yeah, he hasn't really done anything. He hasn't hurt any. It's not going to hurt. He hasn't hurt ratios right yet. The whip's a little high, but the ERA is obviously good. So just something, I don't know where Megill's going to end up the rest of the year, if he's, you know, I don't think we've ever seen a full season from Trevor Megill, too. So that's another thing to take into consideration. He's kind of like him and Pete Fairbanks. It's like, when is the IL stint going to happen? It's kind of late for both of them, or for Fairbanks at least. Fairbanks usually is on the IL by now.
Already.
It's the first time we've seen Fairbanks not be on the IL, you know, going into June. So, but yeah, Megill. I would rather Uribe's stuff has been better this year. He's definitely been getting more swing and miss. So I do wonder, I don't think they're that tied to Megill as the closer. So I do wonder if that switch possibly happens even without Megill having like a massive meltdown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be interesting. That's what I've been hoping for. That's why I'm holding Uribe in our home league. It is interesting to look at Megill's numbers because he looks completely different, and not in a good way, where the strikeouts are down and the walks are way up. But then you look at PLV and he's you know, off the charts, 99th percentile PLV. So maybe there's something in his stuff that he can sort of figure out. Like, it's still there. It's just he needs stuff to.
Plus still loves him too. Yeah.
So he's just got to figure out how to use that stuff effectively. And that's not been, it's been working thus far, but the way that he's been using his stuff has not been to the, it's not supported, you know.
He could change. Something could change and something can click and all of a sudden he's, you know, striking, you know, having two, you're having clean outings, striking out two guys, you know, just dominating. And when that happens, he'll move right back up. But for now, it's just, you know, this is just kind of mediocre supporting numbers for McGill. So that's why he moves down this week. And Robert Garcia is currently blowing the save for the Rangers. So maybe Chris Martin will be closing games after all, after tonight.
Come up. Pick him up. So. Speculative at the very least. Yeah. All right. Our next faller is Felix Bautista, who continues to be the Orioles closer, continues to be all right, but he's clearly not the Felix Bautista we saw prior to Tommy John surgery. We talked at length in the offseason about being patient with Bautista, saying like his stuff's going to come back at some point. He's going to lock in and we're going to say, oh, there he is. That's the guy who was far and away the best closer in baseball prior to his injury. But he's not looking as dominant this year. He's not overpowering, but he's still solid enough that he's going to hold on to this closer role. But for a guy that we had like in the top five universally going into the season, he's certainly not pitching like a top five closer.
Yeah, and it's a combination of, you know, command and the velo still being down. The walk rate, 21.6% walk rate over the past 7.2 innings, which is not a surprise, especially for Bautista. He's never been a big command guy. But I feel like it's different when he's throwing 100 miles per hour. He can get away with you know, some of the stuff being out, not in the zone and, you know, missing spots a little bit. But now that he's like 97.5, it's, I don't know if he can get away with the command being so flimsy. So I think by June we were talking early, like I think in like February, March, we were like, all right, by June, you know, Bautista should get his velo back. And it hasn't really, it's just kind of stagnated. It hasn't really, he's not throwing 99, 100 again. So we'll something to monitor. I do wonder if, you know, and is there a limit on how much he pitches this year too? Because I know the Orioles are what they've won 6 games in a row. So maybe they're working their way back into playoff contention, but if they do fall out of playoff contention rather early, you know, I wonder if we don't see Bautista that much in the second half.
Yeah, that's a good point. I would love for him to get back on track. But yeah, for the Orioles case, they definitely don't want to sort of ruin him going into next season. If this year's a lost year, you know, give him a break, let him come back next year at full strength rather than trying to, you know, grasp at straws until he figures something out for no reason. They don't even make the playoffs. But that's Felix Bautista. Fallen. Our last faller is Kenley Jansen, who's been the closer for the Angels. Really no competition there. And he's been getting like every save opportunity and, you know, doing the job, but it's so underwhelming. It's so like, okay, here's just like the worst pot. Like,
yeah,
I think about it like, okay, of all the possible pitchers to be a closer, like this is the very bottom where you're like, okay, it's fine. That guy can be the closer, but any worse than that. And it's like, what are you doing?
Yeah, he's moved below. I mean, he's behind, you know, Kyle Finnegan now and that type of range where just a rough May for him. 6.4% K minus walk, 7.5% swinging strike, 22.5% CSW, just like no bat missing ability left. 5.9 XFIP. So, yeah, it's. You know, he pitched well against the Red Sox, but that was probably a bit of a revenge outing the last couple days. So he's still going to be the closer there. He would have to either get injured or just really, you know, have a couple disastrous outings to probably lose that job. But it's just not someone I want to roster at this point.
All right, that's Kenley Jansen, and that will wrap up our three up, three down section. To recap, our risers were Emmanuel Clase, Will Vest, and Justin Martinez, and our fallers were Trevor McGill, Felix Bautista, and Kenley Jansen. Next, we'll head into our main topic and discuss the best bullpens in each division in baseball. But first, we're going to take another break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen discussing relievers. We're heading into our main topic where we're going to go division by division and determine which team has the best bullpen. Let's start off with the AL East. We've definitely done this in the past, and I cannot remember if it was ever, if we were ever like making, you know, crazy statements or whatever, but a lot of the times it's pretty clean. Yeah. Oh, well, Jake and Rick agreeing. I've never heard of that before. All right. Let's start off with the AL East. Of course, the Orioles, Red Sox, Yankees, Rays, and Blue Jays. I'll let you go first since I just talked for a good couple minutes.
I just, the way that Rays Rangers game just ended, I kind of feel bad for Robert Garcia. Know. The Rays walked it off of Robert Garcia, but it wasn't all his fault. Like a little, bloop. I mean, he had.
It's not like he threw the pitch or anything.
He also needed to cover first base. He was a little late to get there, and then some shenanigans happened. It's worth watching the replay of how that game ended.
I will check that out.
But yeah, for best bullpen in the AL East, I mean, I'd never in a million years would have thought I would be saying this, but I feel like Toronto, the Blue Jays, have the best bullpen right now.
Wow.
And it starts with, I know Hoffman's had some hiccups, but getting the ball to Hoffman with Brandon Little, he's been awesome. Chad Green's been fine. They found some other pieces there, too, who have kind of, Flaherty from another left-handed option has been really good. The guys that I just, you know, never really thought of going into the
Braden Fisher.
Yeah, Fisher, Paxton Schultz has been pretty solid.
Even Rodriguez.
That's Yariel Rodriguez turning into a, you know, a lights out reliever for them. So if then you get Swanson back now, that could be, they can get him back to where he was when he was with Seattle. I mean, that bullpen could be really good top to bottom. So the Red Sox have some issues. Yankees, I think the Yankees are healthy, they can compete with this. But and same with Tampa Bay, still like a little bit, once if Mason Montgomery was being as good as he can be, like if he was pitching as well as he can be, Tampa Bay would definitely be in the discussion too. But also Edwin, you said, has struggled. They haven't gotten much from, you know, Hunter Biggie, who we were kind of high on. So I feel like for right now, Toronto's the best bullpen in the AL East. But this is one of the better bullpen divisions, I will say.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair assessment because you mentioned all those names, and that doesn't even count guys like Jimmy Garcia and Nick Sandlin on the IL. Where it's like when those guys are back, that bullpen is solid. And it's not even like name power here, too. It's you look at the results and they've got the lowest Sierra in that division, as well as the lowest whip and the highest strikeout rate. So that bullpen is
pretty. In baseball, by the way, that
bullpen. amongst bullpens.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, should have led with that.
I know. Forgot about
but,
that.
But I think the Yankees have more star power. They have more name power where you look at the names and you're like, okay, that's better. But then you start to put the names together and you're like, okay, well, Jonathan Loaisiga and Ian Hamilton and Brent Hedrick are not that great. But like the top of that bullpen is pretty solid.
The thing with the, and I know Tim Hill's been pretty good this year, but I still not like, I would, if they had a better lefty in there, I mean, if we're just talking overall bullpens, I would like them to have a better left-handed option. Toronto's got Flaherty and Brandon Little. The top of that Yankees, when Devin Williams is right, Luke Weaver, and then, you know, Cruz and Mark Leiter pitching well, that's a pretty good four, you know, group of four to get them in. From the sixth inning to the ninth. So yeah, that's definitely the second team in this division.
And the Orioles bullpen is honestly a bit underrated. They
It can be good. Yeah.
Yeah. They have the name. They actually do have the name power where it's like every single person in there. I'm like, okay, they have actually been really good in the past at some point in their career.
Bautista, Brian Baker, Baker's Cano, been really Kagan. Good this year.
Yeah. Like everybody's been solid at some point, but it's just, it's not their year. So that's why they're not the best. And, you know, Tampa Bay's always incredible with their bullpen production. But as you mentioned, I think Mason Montgomery is like a good poster boy for that club because it's a lot of young guys. It's a lot of guys that are sort of trying to establish themselves in the majors. Guys like Manuel Rodriguez and Edwin Uceta, who sort of broke out last year and are trying to now establish themselves.
So the stuff is awesome this year too.
Exactly. The stuff is off the charts in the Rays bullpen, but it's just that they don't have that consistency that you get from having more veteran relievers. So let's move into the AL Central to determine which is the best bullpen in the AL Central. In the past, it's like always been Guardians or Twins.
That's where I think I am now, too. And Detroit's bullpen functions well, but it's not, I'm not going to pick them because low strikeout rate. The way they're used is fine, but I feel like, you know, especially this year, the Twins, I think, are the best bullpen, maybe in maybe even baseball right now. Mm-hmm. You can make an argument for the Twins bullpen. I do think that 4.0 F-WAR is the highest in baseball amongst bullpens.
Yeah.
And that K rate's right behind Toronto, Sierra. I think they might be one of the only, if not the only team that has a Sierra under 3 as a bullpen. So, yeah, they arguably the Twins had the best bullpen in baseball, which we've talked about how good this bullpen can be when they're finally healthy. Mm-hmm. Brock Stewart's finally healthy. Louis Varland's doing his thing out of the bullpen.
That might be the biggest one, is just Louis Varland being there and being dope.
Yeah, and you knew, like, Cole Sands had a good year last year. He's been fine this year. He's been good. Justin Topa's another guy who's not going to blow you away, but it's a solid complimentary piece in that bullpen. And then, obviously, Griffin Jacks struggled at the beginning of the year, but he's really turned it around in a big way. And Danny Couillon, once, you get him back, this bullpen's stacked. When everyone's healthy, that's you see why they're the best bullpen in baseball.
Totally agree. And then so I'll take this opportunity to talk about the Guardians. I agree with you, the Twins.
Yeah, Guardians are close second.
Clearly the best, but the Guardians have an incredible bullpen, obviously with Class A leading that, but with solid guys who sort of broke out last year and Hunter Gaddis and Cade Smith, you've got a really good core 3 to support that bullpen. And the Guardians are just really good at finding random dudes that can just come up and, you know, eat some innings out of the bullpen and be fine. But yeah, you're throwing out like Colby Allard and Nick Enright and Jacob Junis pretty often is not the best opportunity, but they do a really good job of like shuffling guys where you're always having somebody new in there. And I think it keeps other teams off balance, like not really knowing who they're going to face. They have to do a ton of research on all the different pitchers so that they're not caught off guard, but it works really well. Guardians bullpen is dope.
They have like Joey Cantillo gave them some pretty big innings this year, and he I think they sent him down recently, but he's still pitched pretty well for them. And look at some of the guys that are injured there too, not just like Paul Sewald, but Andrew Walters was supposed to have an impact for them, one of the top relief prospects in baseball. Eric Sabrowski too, a guy who's definitely cool missing from the left side. Very cool, very good metrics from him. I know Tim Herring's, that if they had Herring and Sabrowski, that's a really good duo for, you know, a really good lefty pair that they would have in their bullpen. Same with Sam Henkes, who hasn't pitched in a while, or Trevor Stephan. I mean, those two guys are, you know, have been really, really, really good in the past and just haven't pitched in a while because of their injuries. But if this bullpen was to get healthy by, you know, August, then the Guardians are still in playoff contention. It could be a big game changer for them.
All right. So best bullpen in the AL Central, Minnesota Twins. Next, we'll move to the AL West, where honestly, not too much competition. We've talked so much about the Rangers bullpen this year that, and usually it's like when we talk a lot about a bullpen, it's not a good thing. It means there's problems. There's storylines to talk about. Like the situations where Josh Hader's locked in and like nothing's going on in Houston, we don't talk about Josh Hader much. And I think that's why the Astros bullpen is the best. And because we never talk about it.
Yeah.
They go out there with their dope closer, and then they have all these other random dudes that come in and find success.
Credit to them, because they have had they've had a lot of turnover in that bullpen the past couple of years. And we definitely, at least I remember talking about how I was worried about their bullpen entering the season. But then you have guys like Brian King and Stephen Okert coming in and like having really good seasons, especially Okert, who, you know, Okert's always had some, you know, fun swing and miss stuff with that slider. But this year he's taken it all to a whole nother level. So that's a huge reason why the Astros bullpen's been so good. But yeah, the rest of this division too. I mean, the A's and Angels, we don't really need to talk about. Seattle has the personnel to be the best bullpen in this division, but it just hasn't worked out that way so far. But yeah, like we talked about Jackson Cower returning last week. That's someone I'm excited about. And then, you know, between Spear, Vargas, and Brash, those guys are pretty fun as well. And yeah, Texas, it's once they get Spores back, that helps a little bit, but there's still a lot of question marks here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy how bad the A's bullpen has been, but that ballpark has really not been kind to them.
Yeah. Yeah. That was supposed to be their strength, the bullpen, and has not worked out.
Yeah, and we talked a lot about it because they kept adding to it over the offseason, and it didn't look like it was actually going to be solid this year. Yeah, but no, not anymore.
Disaster.
Not doing well. So AL West, best bullpen is the Houston Astros. Now we'll move into the National League and start with the East. And I can tell you it's not the Braves. They have not been doing too well recently. Or you know what? Maybe it could be the Braves, but I think there's some really tough competition. The Mets have an incredible bullpen this year.
I was going to say, this division is pretty beat up outside of the Mets. And I feel like Philly bullpen's been better than what their numbers show. But yeah, I feel like the Mets are the only answer here. And it's another team where kind of similar to like Minnesota for me, where when you have this whole when this bullpen's fully healthy, 1-8, they're really, really good. But like Stanek's been fine. Reed Garrett's been awesome the last couple of weeks. He was kind of middling early, like up until mid-May, but the last couple of weeks he's really turned it on. Brazoban coming from out of nowhere. He flashed a little bit with Miami and was kind of one of their more interesting pickups at the deadline last year. So, yeah, I feel like they have enough pieces here. Again, they've, you know, losing Minter hurts from the left-handed standpoint. And if they could add a better lefty than Brandon Waddell, Jose Castillo, maybe he ends up being legit. But yeah, the left-handed side, left-handed relievers are an issue here. But everything else is pretty set up nicely for the Mets.
Yeah, and we're not even seeing guys like Daniel Nunez is not even on the roster right now. Yeah, they got plenty of guys in the minors. They've been doing that pretty effectively this year, calling guys up and down like Max, Kranick. the first name that comes to mind, where he's been successful when in the majors, but they're just not like overusing him and giving everybody an opportunity. Right. And really, it's like without Reed Garrett, I don't think this bullpen goes anywhere because last year he was so important for them and sort of fell off in the second half. Going into this year, I was really skeptical that he was going to be anybody to keep an eye on. Like I figured the Mets would trust him early on, but I wasn't convinced that he was going to come in and have another incredible season. But he's taken his game to another level compared to last year, which I thought was incredible. 0.68 ERA, 29% strikeout rate for Reed Garrett. I think he's really holding this bullpen together, taking pressure off guys like Edwin Diaz and other setup guys like Ryan Stanek. But yeah, not too much competition in the NL East. So best bullpen is the Mets. Now we'll move into the NL Central. This is a really interesting division for bullpens. We've got a lot of stuff going on. I mean, obviously the Cincinnati was like the big talk of the town in the early season. We spent a lot of time talking about Trevor McGill today. David Bednar is, you know, Don Kelly's our boy, but like the Cubs bullpen has been just all over the place. And even still they're finding success.
Yeah. I mean, that's the only bullpen in this division under 4 ERA right now. Yeah, I mean, we have had worries about the Cubs bullpen all year, but they have kind of stabilized, it feels like. Palencia is giving them, you know, big-time closer innings. Brad Keller, Drew Pomeranz being two setup guys right in June of 2025, who would have thought? but they're both pitching really well. Presley's starting to pitch better, but obviously he doesn't help to the overall numbers this year.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there is still some questions. I mean, Caleb Teelbar has been good as well, but like Ryan Brazier long term and Genesis Cabrera. That's why I'm still kind of confused why they gave up on Tyson Miller. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's not a great division. I mean, I like the Brewers for McGill and Uribe and Mears, mm-hmm. but like outside of that, I don't really know what's going on. Bednar and Santana are a nice 1-2 in Pittsburgh. But yeah, I feel by default the Cubs have the best bullpen here. I mean, Helsley and Matone have been pitching really good. But yeah, I feel like the Cubs have a little bit more depth, especially when Porter Hodge gets back. I feel like that's the difference maker potentially.
Totally. Yeah, it feels like all the other bullpens are like fine, and like then they have like two guys that are good, and you're like, oh,
well, that's what it is.
Yeah. But I think the Cubs have done a better job of having some successful reclamation projects this year. Their bullpen feels a little deeper, but it is very close between the rest of these teams in the Central. So let's wrap things up with the NL West, determine which is the best bullpen here. I think it's been, Giants have a 2.38 ERA.
Let me double check that, because that doesn't seem right, but
it seems so low. I mean, that's possible, but that's crazy. I would just anoint them immediately, but the Padres bullpen has also been incredible this year too, with Robert Suarez, Jason Adam, Jeremiah Estrada at the top of that Giants bullpen.
That's real. Like, that's a real number.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, there we go. That's my choice all the way through. I mean, I think some of the guys have been lucky, but the steps that Randy Rodriguez and Eric Miller have taken this year to support last year's breakouts, as well as guys like Camilo Doval, Tyler Rogers, sort of stepping up to take over for Ryan Walker as he's taken a big step back, is really the reason why this bullpen has been so incredible.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of guys. I know Doval struggled last couple outings, but up until then, use a big comeback story for them. Randy Rodriguez ascension, that's been got huge.
Save yesterday.
Yeah, it's a shame that he might not be able to get too many saves, but whatever, just keep him healthy. Tyler Rogers this year, I feel like he always gets underlooked, but this year he's striking guys out too. He's putting up like legit closer-esque numbers. Yeah, I mean, even if like Ryan Walker, this is their ERA with Ryan Walker struggling and getting removed from the
closer crazy. Role.
So think about if Ryan Walker was pitching well. Mm-hmm. That's how good this bullpen has been. And yeah, it's not surprising. We're not surprised. We've talked about the Giants bullpen being really good in the past. They just got
tough competition.
Yeah.
Dodgers and Dodgers bullpen are legit, but the Dodgers have just been beset by injuries and the Padres have just, the Giants are just too good. Like, the Padres bullpen would be one of the best in any other division, but the Giants have just been that incredible.
Yeah. I mean, and even when you talk about, I mean, Arizona struggled, but when you have like a healthy Martinez and Pac, like that 1-2 combo is so
unstoppable. Electric.
But yeah, I know the Padres are tough to say. The Padres would be the best bullpen in any other division.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the Giants have been so good. So slight edge to the Giants over the Padres. And yeah, when the Dodgers are healthy, like that bullpen's going to be awesome. I mean, the Padres top three is insane. I don't know. The Giants have been just as, I mean,
it's like the names, record for the Padres are better, but the Giants this year, those three, like the Giants bullpen as a whole has been better.
And there's a little bit more depth. I mean, I still like Adrian Morejon, but after like Yuki Matsui's been okay, hit or miss. It's the, like, who's the last
David
three
Morgan.
I, you know, exactly. So, I mean, Sean Reynolds has flashed in the past. That guy has like some big strikeout stuff. Right now, yeah, it's got to be the Giants, but the Padres bullpen can be really good.
That's obviously. Right. All right. Well, that will wrap up our review of the best bullpens in each division in baseball, and we'll wrap up episode 123 of the In the Pen podcast. Rick, why don't you go ahead and plug your social media and anything else you're working on?
You can find me on socials at I am Rick Graham. not working on, you know, just working on the usual closing time on coming out on Tuesdays, hold up coming out on Thursdays, C plus holds coming out on Fridays. Yeah, that's pretty much it for me.
All right. And you can follow me on Twitter at Jake Crumpler. You can follow the pod at In the Pen Pod. You can find all of my work at crumplerbaseball.com. And more specifically, you can listen to me on the First Pitch podcast 4 days a week and go find more of my work over at baseballhq.com. But that'll do it for this episode 123 of In the Pen. We'll talk to you all next week.